I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome once again. We are about to have conversations about the Gaza Peace Flotilla, which is about in the next couple of weeks to go to Gaza Strip. We are about to talk. We're going to talk right now with Melissa Lane, who is a D.C. resident who's traveling to be part of the flotilla. Then we'll talk to Medea Benjamin, founder of Code Pink. And Missy, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
So, Missy, tell me about, I first heard about you through a friend, a mutual friend, Diedrich Muhammad, who said you wanted to, were raising money to join this peace flotilla. I'd like to explain to us a little bit from your perspective what it is and why you, as a young woman from D.C., as a young African-American woman from D.C., wanted to go on this Gaza peace flotilla.
Oh, absolutely. Diedrich Muhammad was very, very kind in helping me to raise the funds to get here. I've been on the waiting list for quite some time, and at the last minute they invited me to come, and it was less than 2 weeks ago, so it was quite a whirlwind in the process of coming here. But it's something that I've wanted to do for a very long time, and personally I feel that it is the most powerful stance that someone can take against, or at least from the outside, against what's happening regularly and every single day inside the Gaza Strip, and it's done with my tax dollars, so I feel a personal responsibility. I've been there before, and I've seen with my own eyes that what happens there on the ground is not what's regularly reported in the media, and again, I feel a responsibility to do something about that and to draw the national attention to the issue.
So, but why? I mean, why you live in Washington? I'm curious why you were so interested. I was going to use the word desperate. Maybe not desperate is the wrong word. To raise the money to do this. I mean, what motivated and pushed you to want to join flotilla where people were actually killed the last time this was done, when the Israeli boarded the boats.
To me, it's akin to the Freedom Rides of the 1960s. And especially, I think that at this moment in time, it's even more important, and that's reflected in the leadership as well of the organizing committee for this entire project, which has taken a year to put together. That's what's been happening since 2008, and this is the 10th voyage. And I feel so passionately about it, partially for the reasons that I described, because I feel a personal responsibility because my tax dollars go to pay for it. And when I was there, I was just so overcome and so horrified that such violence happens every single day. And the world gets a skewed view of it, I feel. I don't feel that I was ever fully aware or given the tools to find out just exactly what happens there. And because of that, I felt powerless and I felt frustrated, and I wanted to do something. I think it's a natural human instinct to want to help and to do so in a powerful way that I felt was effective. And I'm clearly not the only one. 500,000 people applied to be a part of this flotilla. So a lot of us want to take a stand. And again, I liken it to the Freedom Rides. Diane Nash is a huge hero of mine. And during the Freedom Rides, the first group that went down, once they were violently attacked, the committee had decided to quit and no longer do the Freedom Rides. And immediately, the youth of SNCC and Diane Nash decided, no, this is the moment where we cannot give up. We cannot let violence win. And they regrouped, they re-strategized, and then they came back even stronger. And so many people came afterwards, and they were finally successful. And for the first time in a long time, I believe we will be as well.
And have you been involved in this, in the movement around Gaza and the Palestinians for a long time?
I have. I first became involved in 2005 when I went to visit myself. With the construction of the wall, I really started paying more attention to the politics of the area because I felt that Palestinians were never allowed to speak for themselves in the news, which concerned me, and I was convinced that I probably wasn't doing the whole story. And by 2005, I had the opportunity to come, and I did. I was in the West Bank. I studied Arabic with the host family and volunteered, and then had the chance to come back again. And that was the first time I went to Gaza in 2005. We were the last internationals allowed in before the pullout of the settlement. And then in 2007, my fiance and I returned, and so the olive harvest, where farmers regularly in the West Bank are not allowed on their own land to farm their own land. And so internationals come from around the world to stand in solidarity with them, and usually when internationals are with them, they're allowed onto their own land. So it's simple, but very powerful, and that was the intro to it. So,
but given that, that the chances that of the flotilla actually getting through to Gaza itself and the potential of violence, what do you think this will end up accomplishing?
Most important, I feel, to me, is the same thing as the Freedom Rides, to draw, not only to draw international attention and more widespread attention to this issue, but to sort of powerfully question exactly why there's a necessity for this. Why, when thousands of unarmed activists, civilians, are marching up, or rather floating up, if we are met with any violence, which certainly I hope we're not, why would we be? And I think that it forces the question, it begs the question in a way where, well, this is clearly not for security. If we're a bunch of innocent people, if we're a bunch of unarmed civilians, why would there be a necessity to attack us? So I think it begs the question, and it forces people to think more critically about the issue.
I appreciate you taking your time, and we look forward to talking to you before you get on the boat and boats, and also when you get off the boats, and to see what has happened.
Likewise, thank you so very much again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Missy's. Great to meet you by phone. We're about to talk to Medea Benjamin, who's founder of Code Pink and is one of the leaders of the Gaza Peace Flotilla, which is going to attempt to bring supplies to the Gaza Strip. And joins us from Greece, where they, she and Missy and many other Americans are taking training in nonviolence before they depart. And Medea Benjamin, good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great. So, I mean, tell me, this is I was right about that. There are a lot of Americans in this journey, and you are in fact in Greece right now taking a nonviolence training. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. We're going to have a couple of days before we leave to prepare us, and it's a pretty good thing, because I think even seasoned activists like myself, we were pretty shocked today with some of the preparations when it began to look like what a real-life interception of a ship would be.
So tell me about this flotilla. I mean, this is this gathering. This is 10 ships, people from across the globe, and a lot of Americans on this journey.
This is the first time that there's an exclusively American boat. There will be 50 of us in the U.S. boat, and then there are about 9 other boats representing other countries. A total will be 22 nationalities represented, and the U.S. boat represents quite a cross-section of people from 14 different states, many different professions, almost 30% of Jewish background, over 50% women. We range in age from 86-year-old Holocaust survivor Eddie Epstein to a 22-year-old university student.
Is it true? Do I understand Alice Walker is going on this trip?
Yes, Alice Walker went with our group, Code Pink, to Gaza over a year ago now, and she was quite shocked at what she saw in terms of the destruction of the Israeli invasion that they called Operation Cast Lead. And she was so distressed by it that she wrote a beautiful piece that's come out in a book. And she decided, after much soul-searching, to take this risk and join us.
So tell me what you think is going to be accomplished by this. Clearly, the chances of you getting into the Gaza are slim. The Israelis are very clear about that. So what do you think is going to what will be accomplished by this journey?
Well, unfortunately, last year there were 9 people who were killed on the flotilla, and it focused for a short time world attention on what's happening in Gaza. It made the Israelis agree that they would ease the siege and allow more goods into Gaza. It turned out that that was really only temporary and never opening that the people of Gaza want to see. We hope this year there are no people hurt on the flotilla, but we hope it does accomplish the world attention being once again focused on the fact that there are 1.5 million people that still can't go in and out of the little strip of land that they live on. They can't have trade and commerce. They can't have control over their own destinies. And we know, Mark, even before sailing, that we have been somewhat successful because the Israelis have been putting out something about this flotilla every single day. They've just announced that they're going to let more goods into Gaza, which I have to say is not enough. It's not about the Israelis being good prison guards. It's about the Israelis allowing the Palestinians in Gaza to send their goods in and out and live normally, have the freedom that other people have. But already the Israelis have agreed to another easing of the blockade. They didn't allow the German foreign minister into Gaza last week, and now they have suddenly opened it up and said the foreign ministers of European countries are allowed to come in. We see a number of changes that are happening before our boat's even set sail, and we know it's part of their PR campaign to counter the flotilla.
So you don't think what they're doing is as an easing of their position and changing their position to begin to maybe open the Gaza Strip?
We are trying to get them to change their positions by the fact that Americans are willing to put their very lives at risk because they feel that, or we feel so strongly about the conditions that the people of Gaza are living in. But more than that, Mark, it's also about our government's complicity, because we don't feel that Israel could get away with this were it not for the aid of the U.S. government, both in terms of financially, the $3 billion of our tax dollars that go to the Israeli military every year, but also the fact that the U.S. protects Israel at the United Nations using our veto power to stop any resolution from going through that condemns Israel's actions.
What will you do? What is the plan of nonviolent resistance, whatever plan you have, when the Israelis do board and try to block the flotilla from moving into Gaza?
We certainly don't want to see any harm coming to any of the passengers, so we don't tend to. We will not put up any kind of resistance. We are making it very clear that we are unarmed. We are inviting inspectors from other countries and certainly from here in Greece to board the ships and make sure there's no weapons on board. We will have shirts that say unarmed civilians. And the Israelis have already admitted that they know that we're not armed, and they know that we're peace activists. So we will be trying to protect ourselves when the Israeli military comes on board. Again, as I said, our focus is really to take our spotlight and turn it onto Gaza itself. So certainly we're not martyrs, and we don't want to see anyone killed or injured, but we do want to use our ourselves to highlight the conditions in Gaza.
The Israelis did say that, and I was reading that recently, that they, as you just said, doesn't think the flotilla will contain any weapons, but they keep saying that they will attack with military force, and that they've already said that if anybody gets hurt, the Israelis are saying it's your fault, not theirs.
Well, we turn that right around and say that they have no right to intercept unarmed civilian boats on international waters. They want it both ways. They say they don't occupy Gaza, but yet they put up a blockade, in this case a naval blockade. It should be the people of Gaza who decide whether we should come in or not, not the Israelis. And we say that they are acting like pirates on the high seas, if indeed they continue with this idea of intercepting us. We say that we're not doing this as a provocation. What we find so provocative is the Israeli position that it has the right to keep 1.5 million people, most of whom are under 18 years old, in these inhumane conditions. That's the provocation. So we are not, we don't consider our act provocative, and we certainly don't believe that Israel has the right to just come on our ship and take us hostage, take us to Israel, arrest us, deport us. We think those are all illegal actions. And we're waiting for our government to speak up for us. all we hear so far is our State Department echoing the Israeli line. And to be frank, we're quite sick of that. We want our State Department and our government to stick up for us as citizens. And I want to hear them say, hey, Israel, you better not stop American citizens who are unarmed and are traveling in international waters. And if you do, there will be consequences from the U.S. government.
And when are you all setting sail, so to speak, for Gaza? When are you leaving?
Well, that's a very good question, Mark, because we don't know. Originally, we were planning to leave on June 25th. Now it looks like it's been delayed a couple of days. Part of that delay is the pressure that Israel and the United States are putting on governments in the Mediterranean, like Turkey and like Greece, and we have to overcome those obstacles. But we're hoping to set sail in a couple of days.
Are there problems now with the Greek governments? The Greek government to let you out, given all the things that are going on in Greece? Is there pressure not to let you go?
There are rumors about that, and we don't have anything concrete. But we know that there has been a lot of pressure on the Greek government, and we know the Greek government is in a terrible financial crisis, and that's just the time when those kinds of pressures can be more effective.
Well, we will stay in touch with you very closely and do everything we can to keep this on the in people's minds and let them watch and see what's going on. And I thank you, Medea Benjamin, for what you do, and appreciate you taking the time with us. Good luck and stay safe.
Well, thanks for having me on. And any of your listeners who are interested, you can go to us2gaza.org website and follow what's happening with us. And we are asking people that if we are intercepted, that people flood the Israeli embassies and consulates with protests.
Good luck, Medea. We'll talk as you sail on to Gaza and when you get back.
Thank you so much.
Be safe. Bye bye. This is Mark Steiner once again, and we're about to have a conversation with Alan Elsner, who is Senior Director of Communications and Research at the Israel Project. And Alan, welcome. Good to have you with us once again.
Thanks for having me.
So, Alan, the flotilla, as it's called, the Gaza Peace Flotilla, has left from a number of locations: France, Corsica. And looks to be Greece if the Greek government lets them out to challenge the blockade and embargo of in Gaza. And your initial thoughts? This seems to be a very different flotilla in many ways than the one that set sail before, in that it is seems to be all peace activists, European Parliament members, writers, activists. Sports figures from Europe and the United States. So do you see a difference between this and what happened before?
Well, first of all, let me say that I don't question the motives of the people on the flotilla. I take at their word that they're concerned about the situation in Gaza, but I really think that if they were really concerned about delivering humanitarian supplies to Gaza, there were other ways that they could do it. Let me just say that last week Israel approved the delivery of $100 million of materials to build 1,200 new homes and 18 new schools in Gaza. Israel is now transporting about 50,000 tons of goods to Gaza every other week. And Israel is also facilitating the delivery of aid through Egypt. Just last week, a ship from Europe docked at Al Arish in Egypt. It unloaded 30 tons of medicine, wheelchairs, baby food, ambulances that were then taken through the Rafah crossing and into Gaza. And that was the third such convoy to enter Gaza in the last couple of years, and more are coming. So I think that if the concern was really about the conditions in Gaza, which, although they're tough, I think they're improving, then there would be other ways of doing this.
Well, it's clear that we'll come back to the humanitarian side for a moment, but that the Gaza Peace Flotilla has talked about, but they also clearly talked about that they'll be coming back over and over again until the naval blockade of the Gaza of Gaza is over. So clearly that is a huge part of the objective of folks who are part of the peace flotilla is to challenge nonviolently the blockade itself?
Well, I would have to say that from the Israeli point of view, there is a reason for this. It's not just there for the sake of making people's lives miserable. Gaza is ruled by Hamas, which is an Iranian-backed terrorist organization. It's listed as a terrorist organization by the United States and by the European Union. And it's clear that Hamas has fired thousands of rockets and missiles at Israeli civilians. It's fired 330 so far this year, all of them fired at Israeli civilians, towns and villages. And so there is a need to control the materials going into Gaza, because many of these materials are used to build rockets, to build missiles, and other weapons. Just a couple of months ago, terrorists in Gaza fired a laser-guided Iranian missile at a school bus, and fortunately most of the kids that are on the bus had gotten off, but one 16-year-old was killed. So it's not as if that this is a benign kind of situation. Hamas has a charter, and its charter states that its aim is to destroy Israel, and its aim is to kill Jews, and it urges its adherents to do that at every possibility. So I think that, you know, although Israel is concerned about the situation in Gaza and wants the people to be to receive the materials they need, this cannot be an open border. This cannot be an open system, because we know that that Hamas and that the Iranians will take advantage of that instantly to import and smuggle in even more lethal materials that will threaten civilians in Israel.
So what will happen? I mean, we've seen that the Israeli government at first said that that journalists who participated in the flotilla covering it on the flotilla would be banned from Israel for 10 years, but that's now been retracted.
That's correct. That was retracted, and I'm very happy as a person who spent most of his life as a journalist that has been retracted. And it's to the credit of Israel, I think, because it's a country that maintains a free press and is open to journalists to do their jobs and to cover the country without restriction. Something, by the way, that's not the case in Gaza. I worked for Reuters for 30 years, and in January, some guys from Hamas turned up at the Reuters office in Gaza and threatened to throw the correspondent off the balcony because they didn't like what he was writing. So I'm very happy that that's been the case. What I think is going to happen is that this flotilla will be intercepted, and Israel has a perfect legal right under international maritime law to do this. There is a state of conflict between Hamas and Israel. There is a ceasefire, but there's no resolution of that conflict. And Israel has the right to impose a maritime blockade and to enforce it. I very much hope that when these ships are stopped, that will be done peacefully and that nobody will be hurt. But last year, when this happened, some of the people on the flotilla were armed and attacked the soldiers, and the soldiers defended themselves, and unfortunately there was loss of life. So very, very much hoping that there won't be loss of life. But Israel, if it doesn't enforce the blockade, then there is no blockade, and then it's open season to supply these terrorists with whatever they want to have.
So how do you think this is going to play out? I mean, we talked about Hamas being you mentioned the Israeli stance that Hamas is a terrorist organization, and that some people argue that they were elected by the Palestinian people themselves and then denied the right to assume government powers. And others would say that, look, the United States is negotiating with Taliban right now in Afghanistan to try to create peace. So I wonder if some people would argue that you cannot have peace between Israelis and Palestinians unless, despite their being labeled a terrorist organization, that Hamas is at the table.
Well, I think you're doing apples and oranges here.
Okay.
First of all, let's talk about the United States' position on Hamas and the international quartet position, which includes the United Nations, it includes Russia, and it includes the EU. And the quartet has laid down certain conditions that Hamas should fulfill for them to begin to be accepted into negotiations. And one of those conditions is accepting the existence of the State of Israel. The United States is negotiating with the Taliban, but the United States is not negotiating with Al-Qaeda. The United States, to the general applause of Americans and around the world, managed to kill Osama bin Laden. Incidentally, the only people in the world, or amongst the only people in the world, to actually condemn that was Hamas, which hailed bin Laden as an Arab martyr. So there you have the kind of people that you're dealing with. I don't think anyone is going to suggest to President Obama that we start negotiating with al-Qaeda, and I don't think anyone should be suggesting to the Israeli government that they start negotiating with Hamas until Hamas recognizes the conditions set laid down by the quartet, not by Israel, not by the United States, but by the international quartet. Now, right now, with regard to the situation, I'll just refer you to a piece that appeared in the New York Times just this last weekend by Ethan Bronner, and he says, two luxury hotels are opening in Gaza this month. Thousands of new cars are plying the roads. I'm reading the very first paragraph of his story in the New York Times, June 25th.
Yeah.
A second shopping mall with escalators imported from Israel will open next month. Hundreds of homes and 24 schools are about to go up. A Hamas-run farm where Jewish settlements once stood is producing enough fruit that Israeli imports are tapering off. Now, he did paint the other side of the picture, a high unemployment rate, and there's no question that the conditions in Gaza are tough. I just want to respond to the other point you made about Hamas being elected. Yes, it's true, Hamas was elected in 2005, 6 years ago. But the following year, Hamas suppressed, it expelled the opposition, the Fatah opposition, forcibly expelled them. And since then, it has run basically a one-party state. One election, one time, does not make it a democracy. It's been 6 years. What about having another election? Now, we've done polling at the Israel Project in the Gaza Strip, and we find that Hamas is extremely unpopular. And if there were another election allowed today, and if it were a free and fair election, and if people were allowed to vote without fear, then we find that Fatah, in fact, would be re-elected by a landslide and that Hamas would be thrown out of power. I don't expect Hamas to allow another election, not now, not next year, not ever. They are going to sit there and control the Gaza Strip as long as they can. I hope perhaps one day there will be an Arab Spring and that a new government will be brought to power, a government that doesn't reject the existence of Israel but in fact wants to live side by side in peace with Israel. And when that happens, conditions will improve.
So what do you think is going to be the effect of this continuing move by peace activists from across the globe to mount peace flotillas to Gaza to end the blockade and to, as they say, end the blockade, which is, even though the medicines are coming in, their argument is medicine may be coming in, concrete may be coming in, but only in bits and pieces, and that it has to end if the Palestinians are going to have any chance of having any statehood in Gaza in the West Bank. What do you think that this continual pressure, non-violently, it seems, we'll see, will have on the entire process?
Well, I think that people, you know, are free to have their demonstrations and to organize their actions. I just want to point out that there's only 175 miles that separates Gaza from Damascus, where the Assad regime is brutally crushing a pro-democracy movement, indiscriminately firing on unarmed protesters. It's rounded up tens of thousands without any legal process. Is driven thousands of villagers from their homes across the Turkish border. So I'd like to ask these activists, if they were truly motivated by universal humanitarian concerns, then surely at least some of them would turn some of their attention to the genuine human rights atrocities that are taking place right now in the Middle East, not in Gaza, but in places like Syria and Yemen and, of course, in Libya. I think that, you know, Israel has gone through all kinds of periods in its history. It went through two intifadas and it's still there. It went through decades of Arab boycotts at the UN and elsewhere. It's still there. It went through countries massively breaking off diplomatic relations after the 1973 war, and then reestablishing those relations after the fall of the Soviet Union. You know, this is part of life for Israel. Perhaps, you know, in the eyes of some liberal activists, Israel is not top of the pops. But I really have to ask, is the situation in Gaza worse than the situation in Syria right now? Where's the outrage about Syria? Where are the demonstrations? Where are the peace activists non-violently protesting? Well, where's the international media? What the heck is happening here? Why all this focus on one place where, as I said, the conditions are tough, but they're certainly not the worst in the world?
So it seems as if, at least from the news side, that non-violent activists are taking the fore, both in parts of Gaza and on the West Bank. And I wonder how you think this is going to, how this will affect the whole process, especially when Israel has to respond to the flotilla in the next days as it approaches the Gaza Strip.
Mark, I don't have a crystal ball. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. We can revisit this next week when we know how it all turns out. What I hope is that the flotilla will be peacefully intercepted, that the goods will be offloaded, and then they'll be delivered after they've been checked.
Are you saying that the several tons of humanitarian aid that's on board, not the American ships, but on board the other ships, will in fact be allowed in if they're found to contain no weapons?
That's right, absolutely. And you know, Israel said all along that deliver the goods to the port in Ashdod, let's take a look at it, and if it's okay, we'll deliver it. That's been their position all along. It's not a question of keeping the goods out. It's a question of checking what's in the goods and making sure that there are no weapons or materials that can be used to build weapons.
And the argument being that we want to deliver these goods to Gaza directly, that blockade shouldn't exist in the first place.
Well, it's not, to my mind, it's not a question of strengthening the people in Gaza by delivering these goods. It's a question of weakening Israel. If the blockade is broken, then there's no way of stopping weapons and weapon materials from reaching these people who have shown consistently, and they showed it last week when they fired two more rockets, that they're willing to use them.
In what's been the latest news you had in terms of where the flotilla is and how close they come, and will Israel board in international waters again, or will it wait till they get into the 12 nautical mile zone outside of Gaza?
The reports are rather confusing because it seems to have taken these various flotillas in various ports quite a lot of time to get organized. So I'm not actually sure that any of them are yet on the water. And as to where the Israelis intervene and intercept this flotilla, should it in fact get organized and should it approach the coast, I'm in no position to say. I don't speak for the Israeli government, and certainly I don't speak for the Israeli military. I know that they have been training and preparing for this, and the intention is to have a peaceful interception of this flotilla, and that nobody gets hurt, and that the flotilla boats are then escorted to the port of Ashdod, and then they're offloaded, and then the material is checked. And to the extent that the material is indeed humanitarian material, the material is then delivered. And that's certainly what I hope happens. Now, to the extent that the soldiers meet armed resistance, they will defend themselves.
And will in fact the people who take part in the flotilla be denied access to Israel, the West Bank, or Gaza for the next 10 years?
I don't believe so. As you said, the press office, the government press office, put out a statement which has now been withdrawn. So my understanding is that certainly in terms of reporters who are on board doing their jobs, there won't be any repercussions. And as far as the individuals who are concerned, last time they landed in Israel and then were deported back to where they came from. If they want to visit Israel, all they have to do is catch a plane, and most countries, they don't have visa requirements. They're perfectly free to go in and to go out.
Alan Nelson, we'll look forward to talking to you again once this is over, and our continued conversations with Israelis and Palestinians over the years will continue here on the Mark Steiner Show. Alan Elsner is Senior Director of Communications and Research at the Israel Project. And Alan, once again, thank you so much for taking your time with us.
Thank you, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.